This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Ron Stacker Thompson always wanted to be a teacher. As a kid in Chicago, Ron loved the classroom, he excelled in school, went to college to become an educator, and soon started teaching. But his work as a drama teacher quickly led to another career. Ron began acting as a way to improve his skills with his students. But he started to get roles, and eventually starred in the hit musical Godspell. He was the first African-American actor cast as Jesus for the production's national touring company. Then he went on to start a theater company with the help of his students and began writing and directing his own plays, eventually made the jump to Hollywood, spent years behind the scenes as a screenwriter and a producer, worked on movies like Sister Act 2, received an NAACP Image Award for the HBO special America's Dream. Today, he is a professor at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. And as the chair of the screenwriting discipline, Ron Stacker Thompson joins me on the program now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So you always more or less knew you wanted to be a teacher?
Always. I had the best teachers. Even now, I think back, they were so inspiring. They were great people. I learned so much. They made me know that I could be somebody.
Do you have that one teacher who stands out, or is it just the
old? Yes, yeah. Mrs. Sams. Mrs. Sams was this tall, statuesque woman with white hair, beautiful white hair. She taught English, and I just thought she was the world. I had never met anyone quite like her who was so learned and yet so real, you know. She did not teach above the students, but right with us.
And sometimes you talk about English. I mean, sometimes in that experience, there's also an opening to the subject itself. Were you in love with literature and words before this, or is this somebody who opened that universe?
She opened it.
Yeah.
I had no idea of anything, really. I was just a kid. But she and some before her just made me begin to love words, to love conversation, to think through things, you know, just opened up the world.
And this was a kid in Chicago. Tell us about your neighborhood growing up and your family.
My neighborhood was the most special neighborhood you can imagine. It had everything. It had African Americans. It had, they were called Bohemians at the time. We're talking about the 40s, late 40s, into the 50s. But they were European whites. And there were Latin people there. This amazing neighborhood, I didn't know it was amazing until I grew up and realized that most people I knew came from one kind of neighborhood. You know, there was one kind of economic thing going on. The neighborhood was all black, or it was all white, or it was all Latina. So it was a very special neighborhood.
How about your family?
I'm an only child. There are people I work with, one woman in particular, whom I just adore, and I tell her she's the sister I never wanted.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, because she's close, but I didn't have to put up with her as a child, you know. Yeah. I had this need, though, at the time when I was growing up I wished, as I think only children do, to have, you know, sibling. So much so that when I would go to school, people would say, "Hi, Ron," and I'd go like, no, I'm done.
you became your own brother?
I became my own twin brother. And I would play that, you know, until somehow they found out, oh, come on, it's you, right?
So you see, your theater career began a lot earlier than you thought.
You know, I never thought about that, but you're right.
You also had experience in the South. You grew up, as you say, in Chicago, although born in the South?
Born in Clarksville, Tennessee, which is about 40 miles some way of Nashville. But we left there when I was maybe four and a half. So I was really raised in Chicago. But I would go back to Clarksville every summer, and loved that experience you know, during those summers.
Well, I can imagine, because then you go from only child to extended family, and you go from big city in the north to the south, to a small town in the south, relatively. Mm-hmm. Was that a big change for you? I mean, what was it like to hang around with your cousins in Clarksville?
And there were many of them. As I said, I was an only child, but they had all these brothers and sisters and whatever. And they were poorer, you know, than I was. So the way they played was, I think, ingenious. What they would do, one thing in particular I remember, they would take huge cardboard boxes and make rooms and tunnels. And I was just amazed by that. We would, like, climb through them and find each other and have our own rooms. And it was wonderful.
Become another universe,
yeah,
too. You had to be
invited
in, extended family. So, and what about in growing up in Chicago? Now, you talked about sort of always wanting to teach, but what about the arts? When did you develop, or did you?
No. Somehow, I don't know if it was the 50s or what, but there was only band and orchestra and chorus, you know, choral stuff happening in grammar school and high school. I was not in any of that until high school, and I learned to play the trombone, which I loved at the time. But there was no drama, no theater. Mm-hmm. So my only experience art-wise was playing the trombone. Yeah.
So you go to Illinois State University, mm-hmm. right? And which I think at the time was Illinois Normal, so that would have been
Illinois State Normal, right. University.
So kind of a teaching school. So you knew you were going to go in there. But there's a story you tell about sort of realizing at the last minute you don't have enough money to get there.
Yes. I was really young, just 16 or so when I finished high school. Excuse me. And I just did not know how to manage the world. I had these scholarships and all to go to Illinois State Normal University, but I didn't have the money, and my parents didn't have the money at the time. This was like, you know, late 50s, you know, recession, right. Depression, whatever you want to call it. I didn't have the money to get on the bus and go. And I didn't have the wherewithal. Were you crazy? To ask or to somehow get it. So I'm sitting in the library in tears because the next week or so I was supposed to go. And this wonderful librarian, she came up to me and asked, you know, why are you so upset? And I said, I can't get to school. When I think about it, it's so crazy. And she gave me whatever it was, I don't know, $30, I don't know what it was, to get to school. Mm. And I'm not sure what I would have done had she not done that.
You, I wonder if you always wonder in a thing like that where it's so obvious what you could have done and could have asked for help, if it isn't some block, like some you know, really you're just sort of some deep anxiety about even going to a university. It's like, what am I doing? I can't go there.
I don't know. It just seems so strange to me now.
Well, you wanted to be an English teacher,
yes.
Right? Is that the idea? So what was it about teaching English that attracted you?
Mrs. Sams.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to emulate Mrs. Sams. I thought, if I can do for others what she did for me, that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
What was the transition like for you going to college?
Great, because I was basically shy. Everybody was younger. Now, excuse me, everybody was older than I was. So I was always kind of like the person coming behind, mm-hmm. not sure of self. But when I got to university, that all changed. They didn't know who I was. And I all of a sudden realized, you know, I can be anybody I want to be. These people don't know me.
You can be Don again.
Yeah, I can be Don again. So I did everything. I tried to experience everything, new friends and new ways of thinking and stepping out of my shell.
What were you imagining for yourself? Did you know, in terms of how this was going to all end up and where you would be and what sort of a classroom, did you see yourself in Illinois, moving around? What were you thinking? How did you picture yourself?
I didn't even think about it. What was so important to me was to gain the knowledge. I was not thinking ahead as to where I wanted to be or what place I wanted to, you know, make this all happen in. I just became so excited about becoming all that I could be, and maybe getting that across to people, but not where I would do it or even how I would do it.
So eventually you did. You graduated. Talk about your first teaching job.
My first teaching job was, and people did this then, back at my high school. So 3.5 years later, I go back to teach at my high school, and there is Mrs. Sams. So I actually got to teach with her in the same department that she was chair of.
Were you scared?
No.
Cause,
no.
Because she was nice.
Yeah, I was thrilled. I thought, this is heaven, you know. And other teachers there as well that I really appreciated. And I also got to teach with the ones I hated, you know. So I could rib them or do things that I couldn't do in high school, you know, to kind of let them know that I didn't necessarily think the world of them. You know, it was a terrible thing to do, but I did it.
We will find out where it went from there and how you ended up in Hollywood and right now at the School of the Arts in Winston-Salem as my conversation with Ron Stacker Thompson continues. Spent decades as an actor, playwright, stage director, and film producer. Today, the chair of the screenwriting discipline at UNC School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. And our conversation will continue on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. My guest, Ron Stacker Thompson, spent decades as an actor and a playwright, stage director as well. He's been a screenwriter and a film producer, and today is the chair of the screenwriting discipline at UNC School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. So just before the break, we had you back at your high school where you were now teaching with the teachers you loved and not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Also had a disagreement with a principal. I guess there was a change in principals, right, at a certain point.
Yes, from when I had gone to school there. And this new person came in, Mr. Carroll. I will never forget his name. And he was, and I don't mean this terribly to people in the military, but he was a military man.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran the school that way. And he was not so open to change or whatever. And I, of course, was, you know, this new teacher wanting to do new things and trying. And I remember wanting to team teach with the person that I admired in the English department who became my wife. We wanted to team teach. No relationship at that time other than that. And he wouldn't let us. And so after a couple of years, I was just indignant. I quit.
Well,
you know?
Not only that, but really out of spite, then you married her.
Right.
I'm sorry.
But they didn't know that. That happened a little later.
That'll show them.
But you know, when you're young, what I was maybe 22, 23, whatever, I will not stay here in a place that doesn't allow me to be all that I can be and do all that I can do for the students. So I quit and had a friend in San Francisco who said, well, why don't you come out here at least for the summer until you decide what you're going to do? So I went, and all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, that was a foolhardy thing to do. You now have no job. You don't know this area, really. What's going to happen? He said, I'm going to a pool party in Orinda, warmer than San Francisco, thank goodness. And he invited me to come, and I went, I need to find a job. You know, I need to concentrate here. I do not need to go and lie around a pool, especially when I don't even swim.
There you go.
Right. But he was persistent, so I went. And there, as I'm kind of semi-brooding, I hear someone say, you know, I've got to stop having all this fun. I've got to find an English teacher. And I went, I raised my hand. I said, I'm an English teacher. It was crazy, you know. He said, can you be in my office Monday morning? I said, I will be there. And this was Oakland Technical High School. And, of course, I had the credits and all and the experience. He hired me to teach English. And as I was about to leave the office gleefully, he said, wait a minute, I forgot. You also have to teach drama. And he said, you do teach drama, right? And I went, of course. I had no experience. Yeah. None. Had never acted, had never thought about acting. But I had the summer to learn. So I took classes, and at that time in San Francisco, they would have in the paper auditions for professional shows. Yeah. So I said to myself, do it, try it, see, you know. And I began to get this feedback that I had some talent and began to land roles. You know, I probably had two roles that summer alone before I started teaching, you know. And thus began a whole other part of my life.
That had to be pretty scary. I mean, San Francisco is a big city, and you're auditioning with some, you know, that's a pretty good talent pool that you're up against. And even if you can tell yourself, oh, it's for the kids, you know, you've got to put yourself out there.
Yeah. And the thing that really, I guess it must have still been that summer, I don't know, or soon after, Hair was huge on Broadway, and it was, you know, coming to San Francisco. And I said, okay, I might as well. And I had lots of hair then, lots of hair. I said, so this is perfect. This is perfect. I had a natural that, you know, knocked down walls, right? So I said, okay, I'm going to audition. And it must have been like 1,000 people. I keep remembering that it was, you know, more than hundreds. It was, you know, people came from all over because it was huge. And out of those 1,000 people, got down to 50. I was one of the 50, and they chose 25, and I was not one of them. But it did tell me, you must have something. You must have something. Why would you get down to 50 out of 1,000?
Not only was this the age of Aquarius, but also the age of videotape, so that you could actually see yourself, right?
Yes, in the classes that I took, these people obviously were way ahead of their time. They actually videotaped us as we worked. And so, yeah, I got to see, wow, you don't look so bad. You don't sound so bad.
Well, that's what, could you see it? I mean, obviously they saw something, and you could say by reflection, I must be okay if they like me.
Yeah.
But could you
but
see
they
it?
Would play it back.
But could you see it? Could you see the talent?
I could see, yes. Oh. I could see something other than myself. And that struck me. I was like, wow, I am embodying this character that is not me. I didn't know I could do that.
So now you've got this talent anyway, and you can see it growing. Initially, you do this just to be a better drama teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to dismiss that. That's an important cause.
Not
and,
even and better, just be one.
To be one at all. You know, one chapter ahead of the kids.
Right.
But were you starting to have conflicts now in your own mind, or did you say, that's wonderful, but now back to the class?
Oh, yeah. My thrust was still teaching. Mm. This was a fun. As I said before, when I started university, I said to myself, do anything, experience anything that comes to you. If it's an opportunity, take it, see where it goes. Mm. So that's how I saw this whole acting thing. This is great fun, you know, something I had never done, but obviously I was pretty good at it. Yeah.
What about your experience in the classroom when you did take that job? It was that Oakland Tech? What was it called?
That was the Oakland Tech, yeah.
Yeah. So what was that like? Because I understand that was, to some degree, there was a bit of a culture shock there, too. This is California, 1968, of kind of an informal environment.
Right, and I am a well-taught teacher. At that time, wore a jacket and tie and carried oneself in a certain kind of way. I go to California, and these kids are like, they seemed like 10 feet tall, you know, they were into everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say to me, you know, Mr. Thompson, why don't you, you know, come out of your jacket and relax? And I said, no, that's for you to do. I'm here to teach you. I'm here to be who I am and get this. So we had this wonderful kind of let each other be who each other needed to be thing, you know.
Did that make you uncomfortable at first?
No.
The informality of it? No.
Well, I got used to it because I realized it was just their way. It wasn't against me, nor was I against them, and they realized that. And we had a great relationship. And I think I taught them decorum, you know, by simply being who I was, and that that was okay. Be who you are. You know, you don't have to become someone else in order to make things work. So it was a good experience for me and for them. And some of those kids I still know.
You
today.
Do. You keep up with them. Mm-hmm. Are they in the arts?
Not really, but they, you know, fringe-wise.
But they care enough to stay in touch with
you.
That's very great. You eventually you took a job at Merritt College in Oakland, right?
Yes. A couple of years, I guess, after I was there at Oakland Tech, I was asked to come to Merritt College. And Merritt College, I don't know if you know, but was the Black Panther school, in a sense. The head of the department, which was ethnic studies that I was in, was Huey Newton's brother, Melvin Newton, who was a great guy. And there I taught all African-American studies. I taught African-American dance, African-American literature, poetry, theater. And the same thing was true because there I was in my suit and tie and all. And here were these wonderful people, you know, in terms of wanting Black power to become. And they were in their fatigues and berets, and it was a great mix.
Well, this is obviously a very self-conscious, a kind of a nationalist project about pride, about building a self out of a nation that had denied this for so long. Had you been there in your own mind? I mean, this is
no.
not a thing you slip into, it seems
no.
to me.
I mean, they taught me that.
Yeah.
In Chicago, I'm sorry. The rest of the world in America is behind California in terms of social things, political things. So I was not. I mean, I was aware of, you know, the terrible things that should not have been in terms of ethnic people, but not like they were in California.
Then what was it like to be sort of at the head of the class, right? You're teaching the class, but as you say, to some degree, you know, your students may have been ahead of you in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an interesting, you know, to be teaching these kind of studies programs.
Mm-hmm.
Were there confrontations, or was it a pretty comfortable relationship?
Generally, yes. I mean, we would have, you know, as I would deal with a piece of literature or poetry or whatever, we would have certain conflicts in terms of the times. Why are you teaching this?
Yeah.
And how is this relevant? And all of that. And I believed it was. And so we would have wonderful discussions. In fact, there was one person. I have now been his best man at least twice, maybe three times.
Oh,
we are still friends.
Yeah.
From way back then, he challenged me, you know, so many times. But we both learned so much from one another.
What did you learn in that?
I learned to trust what I believed in. I learned to be open to listening to what others had to say that I might not have been aware of or had knowledge of. It was a wonderful time. I felt I grew so much as a person.
To the point that you could finally play the role of Jesus.
Ah! was that it?
Well, I don't know. But this is about the time that you auditioned for the role, a role in Godspell. Tell us about that.
Yes. I would go, because I loved theater so much, I and my wife at that time, we had married by that point, would go to New York. To see every show that we could in 2 weeks, which would be like 30 shows.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, because then they only cost
$20. $7 million, yeah.
Right. You know, now it's a fortune to see that many shows. And one of the shows that we saw one of those times was Godspell. It was off Broadway. And we both loved it. We just loved it. And we went back, of course, to California, and lo and behold, there were auditions coming up for Godspell. And again, many, many hundreds of people from all over the country came to audition because it was that kind of show that just attracted people. You wanted to be in it. And both my wife and I auditioned for the show, but we did not tell them that we were married. They did not know. Because at that time, and maybe even still, if you were having a relationship with someone in the show, there was this thought that you were going to ruin the whole thing.
Well, that's why the whole Jesus, Mary, Magdalene thing never got publicized.
Yeah, right.
Exactly why.
Yeah. So we both were lucky enough to be cast in the show, you know, of 2 of 10 people. We didn't know at the time we were all cast who was going to be what person. Yeah. And when the director cast me, everybody was around, as Jesus, there was this this gasp. And I was stunned. I had no idea because there was, in the New York company, there was one black man. And he sang the song that I loved, and I thought, I'm going to be cast as him. That's generally what happens, right? Mm-hmm. But no, I was cast as Jesus, and this became such a thing. When the show opened, we were picketed by Jews for Jesus. That was the name of the group. We, of course, got incredible reviews. I personally got incredible reviews, and the picketing only added to folks coming. They had to come and see, you know, what was going on.
How did you manage that, though? Because you're chosen, no doubt, for your talent. You were right for the role, but it was a groundbreaking choice to cast a black man as Jesus of Nazareth
at that time,
in that moment. And so it seems to me that you have this thing you have to deal with. I'm really good in this role. This is not a novelty. Did you feel a burden of having to sort of put the asterisk after your name and say, this is not a novelty act. This is me playing this role because I'm playing this role.
You know, I'm the kind of person, I don't go through all of that. I just don't. You know, if this is my job, as this is what I have to do, I do it. You know, I don't doubt. I don't question. Unless I see for myself that somehow I'm not up to where I want to be. But I don't question what the world is thinking of me. I'm pretty confident that way. I do and believe in what I do. No. So the answer
there you go.
Is no.
Well, this kind of casting then is beginning to catch on, and people are realizing, why don't we just cast people for the roles they belong in? And you, at this point, near this time, helped to start the Oakland Ensemble Theater with the help from your students at Merritt.
Right, because I was still teaching at Merritt, you know, doing 8 shows a week at Godspell and teaching, you know, a regular full load because I didn't want to leave, you know, my students. I enjoyed teaching. And it's like I always say a Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland thing, you know, my theater classes at Merritt, they were like, Mr. Thompson, which was something, because see, they called me Mr. Thompson, they called their other teachers but I wouldn't allow that.
By the first name.
My background, I didn't allow them to call me Ron, right? I said, Mr. Thompson, why don't we start a theater company? And I'm like, I'm doing my 8 shows of Godspell. If you can find, you know, a place to do that, and so I'll go with you guys. I really will. Lo and behold, they find in downtown Oakland this mansion, this beautiful mansion, somewhat in disrepair, for lease, for sale, for whatever, and it had a theater in it. I mean,
gotta do it.
Yeah, gotta do it. So our construction, I guess it was called, department or whatever. They learned how to, you know, do carpentry. They came in and they remodeled, and the bathrooms got fixed, and I got a board together, and we started Oakland Ensemble Theater.
And tell us about that and the theory and some of the ways in which you cast and sort of thought about that
well, project. Because, you know, this group of students, they were everything, you know, every color, you know, everything. I said to them, I said, look, you're an ensemble. And let's make this theater not only be called Oakland Ensemble Theater, but bring to it who you are. All the mixing and all the different ages, and also we cast shows, you know, by talent, not by color, not even by gender necessarily. We just cast people who were good, and became kind of the only theater at that time in the area that did that.
We'll talk a little bit more about that, then we'll get you to Hollywood, and then we'll bring you here to Winston-Salem and talk about how Ron Stacker Thompson ended up at the UNC School of the Arts in Winston-Salem as part of a long career that includes screenwriting and production in Hollywood and theater production as well. And that conversation continues in a moment. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. I'm talking with Ron Stacker Thompson. Spent decades as an actor, a playwright, and a stage director, been a screenwriter and a film producer, and today is the chair of the screenwriting discipline at the UNC School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. So we have you in Oakland, California. You've started the Oakland Ensemble Theater. You're in Godspell, and at some point, you're also doing some writing, right?
Actually, at that point, I'm doing adapting, because I found that there were theater pieces I wanted to do that were creaky, and I always feel that you, as a director for stage, I always feel that you need to bring that piece of art into the time, into the place, into the now, and the people you're doing it for. Mm-hmm. So there were several pieces, Native Son, for example, by Richard Wright, which was an incredible novel, but had been made into a horrible play, mm-hmm. and an even more horrible movie that starred him at 45 playing a 20-year-old person. So, but I wanted to do that. I felt it was important for the community to experience that. So I started writing to adapt that. And I did the same thing for one of James Baldwin's works. So that's how I really started writing. As an English person, I was not a writer. I was a language person, you know, dealing with syntax and grammar and all of that. So yes, I guess I did start writing, but not my own original works.
Eventually, though, you do get to New York because one of your plays is picked up for production?
Yes. As I said, I always did things because they struck me. And all of a sudden, at some point, I got asked by someone to do a small piece on Paul Laurence Dunbar, who was a black poet in the 1880s and 90s. He made his living as a poet, which was highly unusual. So I created a theater piece, a musical theater piece on Paul Laurence Dunbar, and was asked to bring that off Broadway in New York.
What was that like for you? And what was the theater scene then in New York?
Oh, it was great. It was just great. So much was going on. So much was affordable again. It was wonderful. And the reception I got for Dunbar, that's what I called it, was great. Won awards. And, you know, packed houses. And again, it told me, you can do this. Mm. you know?
Well, especially if you think about adapting poetry for the stage. I mean, you've given yourself a tall order.
I mean,
most of us have at least heard of Dunbar, but, you know, it's poetry for the stage and music, so it's a tall order. It's successful. You're there in New York, and then you hear the call from Hollywood. Tell us about that.
Well, no, I didn't. I made the call. I didn't hear the call. I just decided, after being in New York, I guess we were there a good 9-10 years. I just decided I wanted to find out what film was all about. Not that I wanted to do away with theater, but it just, what is film about? And I thought I wanted to be, or to try to be, a director for film. But I had this great friend, Pamela Goodlow, that's her name. She was the executive secretary to Bill Duke, the director and actor. And she said, Ron, if you're really, you know, interested in film, why don't you come out and meet Bill? I mean, he's a director at the time for, like, night soaps, but he wanted to go into film. So I flew out, met with him, we hit it off, and he said to me, when I get a film, I'm going to call you.
Hmm.
Now, everybody says that, you know, I'm going to call you when it's time. He actually did call.
Oh.
And I went out. My wife stayed in New York. I went out there and began to work with him, shadow him, and learn about film. Everything I have, other than to teach English, everything I have learned was on the job.
Yeah. Well, and here's, you talked about the film. The film he was talking about was Sister Act 2. Am I right? Or is this
No. There were films before that. Rage in Harlem, others I can't think of right now. Sister Act 2 was probably the fifth film we did together.
What were you actually doing then? What was your role in those
on
earlier
Sister Act
films?
2?
Well, we'll start with some of those earlier. When you first started working with him,
When I first started working with him, I was like his assistant. Not the assistant that goes and gets cleaning and all of that, but I was there when he needed me.
Mm-hmm.
We were the same age, so he respected me in terms of what I had to bring. So he allowed me to really be a part of what was going on. And then after a certain point, I became one of his producers. He said, you know, and people said, some of the films we worked on, you are doing more than just being an assistant. You are really being a producer.
And what is, for film, what does it mean to be a producer?
It means a lot of things. So you'll see in a film, the executive producer, associate producer, you know, so many.
Yeah.
So it really does depend on the film and what it is. I happen to be, as a producer, someone who made sure that all the elements, all the departments were in harmony. They would come to me to get my opinion on things even before they would go to the director. And in fact, because they came to me, I could, like, take care of problems before they became problems. So that Bill never had to deal with certain things. He could do what his job was, which was to direct the film, not just deal with all the stuff going on.
Well, the stuff, it seems to me now, as you say that, this opens up a number of specialties that would be required for a producer. You'd need to be a psychiatrist, I would think. Certainly an administrator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who knows, you know, sort of where to get the vouchers so everybody gets paid. But also, what about
a nurse?
A nurse. And the creative side. I mean, I'm guessing that where are some of the questions, creative questions, you know, sort of where are we going to put
very
this?
Very much
kind of
so. And I would, you know, because by that point I had some years in terms of knowing how to make things work creatively, I would listen to what they had to say, what their problems or concerns were, give them something to go on, check with Bill, you know, to let him know, Bill, there's something happening here which I feel should be taken care of this way. Are you okay with that?
I'm wondering, is this kind of an internal, like a dispute between two actors, or is it a dispute over the script? I can't say this. This is not
all of those things.
Oh, I mean,
sometimes a costume designer would come to me and say, the star doesn't want to wear what I have selected for them. Mm-hmm. What am I to do? So then I would go to the star and see what the problem was. I'd come back to the costume designer and say, you know, it's not the whole thing. It's just the top. You just need to tighten that a bit, and I think she'll be okay.
I'd just shoot it from the waist down.
Yeah, right? So it was, you know, yes, psychiatrist trying to figure out how to best to keep this moving and going, because you don't want things to stop and for people to get at odds, you know.
Not at those rates.
No.
So what was your role? What were you doing then? Sister Act 2 was a film, and mm-hmm. you were a producer for that.
Yes.
So tell us about that, because now you're working with Whoopi Goldberg, Maggie Smith.
Right, right. Incredible women. Very different, but each a marvel. I think of Whoopi, who does not suffer fools. No, she's very much the way she comes across, mm-hmm. you know, these days. But at the same time, a very warm and giving person, you know. Maggie Smith, I think of her. She's, of course, I'm sure Dame Maggie Smith now. And she is a dame, you know, in the best sense of the word, dame. So bright, so ladylike. But with spice, you know, that extra spice that gives, that comes through in all the characters she plays.
Well, here they are together in Sister Act 2, which was produced by my guest today, Ron Stacker Thompson.
You see, Dolores, we need your help here at St. Francis. We seem to have got him slightly over our heads.
What do you want?
Help us by becoming a teacher.
A teacher? Me?
Oh, no.
Listen, I'm not cut out to be a teacher. Who would I teach? What would I teach?
Teach the children. Teach music. You weren't cut out to be a nun either, but look what you accomplished at St. Catherine's. You brought a new spirit into the convent and into the community. You were infectious. You could be just as infectious here.
You're making me sound like a disease.
It's a clip from the 1993 film Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. My guest, Ron Stacker Thompson, was a producer on that film. He is now the chair of screenwriting discipline at the UNC School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. What did you learn in that whole process? Not just that film, but your time in Hollywood.
That I had this talent, this facility, this ability to bring people together. To calm the seas, to excuse me, make people want to give their best, their all. I didn't really know that before, but I certainly learned that then. And you know, I'm glad you said a producer this time before you said the producer. Big
right.
difference. I was a producer.
One of the producers. Well, and then, but that gets us to the whole setup and the way film is arranged and put together, comparing that with the stage. Is it a completely different experience? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot that carries over. But.
Oh, yes. And that's what, you know, I said earlier that I thought I wanted to be a director in film. Because the titles are the same, director, producer, actor, you know, costume. But the roles are really different. How a film is put together, what it demands, very different from a theatrical production.
What brought you to Winston-Salem and the School of the Arts?
Interestingly, again, I was in Hollywood 10, 11, 12 years and had a good career. But there's something about the way that most people in Hollywood have to do. You have a project, and you may love that project or not, but it pays you, and it, you know, and that's great. But then, unlike most businesses, you have to get another project, and in between could be months, could be sometimes a year. So there is no money. happening then. Then you get this big wad of money, but you have to pay off what has been not for a while. And that began to get to me, you know, the fact that I didn't have the security that I wanted to have. And I was older, you know. Mm-hmm. So a neighbor across the street kind of got wind of my discomfort and said, "Ron, you're not teaching." And I had forgotten. I think I was teaching in a way, doing the producing and all. Excuse me. But I did not, I had left it. And it was important to me. I had not taught in maybe 20 years. And all of a sudden it struck me, that's what's missing. I'm not teaching. And teaching gives you a little bit more security. So my wife, Clee Thompson, said, "Okay, I'm going to start sending out your resume and all." So she did, and schools bit. And interestingly enough, many of them wanted me to teach theater in California, so we would have, you know, stayed there, and that would have been good. But this particular place wanted me to teach film. So they brought me out, School of the Arts, and I fell in love with the place. I fell in love with the people, the folks who would become my colleagues. There was just a feel about that place that said, yes, yes, I want to be here. And I was offered to either teach in the producing area or in screenwriting. Mm. I chose screenwriting.
Pretty good school, and turned out some fairly, you know, some well-known talent.
Yes.
And you've had a few students who we've heard of, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Travis Beecham, who wrote the remake of Clash of the Titans, and oh gosh, I can't think of the other film.
Was that Pacific Rim?
Who did Pacific Rim?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And in Pacific Rim, it's so great. The character played by Idris Elba, his name is Stacker Pentecost.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I'm like, Travis, come on now, you know.
What's it like? Because it seems to me that if you look back over the course of our conversation, and therefore perhaps the course of your life, mm-hmm. What we see is this guy who's really committed to the form as the way of to way forward into creative expression. And now you've had a lifetime, part of a lifetime anyway, up until this point, practicing that, and now you can bring that to the classroom.
Yeah.
It seems to me.
Yeah. I teach now. Maybe even then, but especially now, by what I know, by how my life has been. And these are all young people wanting to be, working at being artists, at being creative. And I say to them so many times, you know, don't doubt yourself. You know, there's enough doubt out there, and folks will come to you doubting you, but you must never doubt yourself. And you must take every opportunity that comes to you to grow. You do not know, I certainly never knew that I would wind up doing the things I've done and loving the things I do if I had not taken that opportunity, fearful though I may have been, you know, because it's not easy to say, okay, let's try this. Okay, you can do that now. Go ahead and do it. And you're like, wait a minute, I don't know that. I don't know you. You know, why? But you do it because it's a chance to grow.
We will stay tuned and have you back for the next chapter. But for now, Ron Stacker Thompson, what a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Ron has spent a career as an actor and a playwright, as well as a stage director, worked as a screenwriter and film producer. Today, professor at the UNC School of Arts in Winston-Salem. He teaches, in fact, is the chair of the screenwriting discipline. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brooklyn. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.